Why didn't they want to take me, Nick? She sounded sad at the thought. I moved over to the chair and picked up her jeans and shirt. I didn't want her to see my eyes. It isn't that they didn't want to take you, but there was a mistake made, and that's why they asked me to look after you. Just like Home Alone. I turned round and saw that she was smiling. I had to think about that one. Yeah, that's right, just like Home Alone. They left you by mistake. I remembered watching it on a flight. Shit film, but good booby traps. I busied myself with her jeans again.
So, when will we see them?
I couldn't spend all day picking up two bits of clothing. I did a half turn and walked back towards the bed. That won't be for a while yet. But when I spoke to them just now, they wanted me to tell you that they love you, and they're missing you, and to do everything I say and be a good girl. There was a beaming smile on her face. She was taking this all in, and I wished I had the courage to tell her the truth. I said, Kelly, you must do what I say. Do you understand that?
Sure. I understand.
She nodded, and I saw a little child needing affection. I gave her my best attempt at a smile. Remember, they wanted me to look after you for a while. I looked into her eyes.
Come on, cheer up. Let's watch TV.
We both went back to watch Power Rangers with a can of Mountain Dew. I couldn't take my mind off the news broadcast. Kelly's photograph had been on the TV. The receptionist, the clothes storekeeper, anyone might remember her. Surely the embassy had called London by now. Surely every fucker knew what was going on because it was splashed all over the news. No need to wait 3 hours before making the call. I'd have to go to the outside phone again because I didn't want Kelly to hear. I put Kev's jacket on, slipped the TV remote control into a pocket, told her where I was going and left. As I came to the stairs by the Coke machine, I looked down. Two cars had pulled up outside the reception lobby. Both were empty, but their doors were still open, as if the occupants had piled out in a hurry. I looked again. Besides a normal radio aerial, both vehicles had 2-foot antennae on the back. One of the cars was a white Ford Taurus, the other a blue Caprice. There was no time to think, just enough to turn round and run like a man possessed towards the rear fire escape. Chapter 8. Now wasn't the time to worry about how they'd found us. As I ran, the options started to race through my mind. The obvious one was to leave Kelly where she was and let them pick her up. She was a millstone around my neck. On my own, I could get away. So why did I stop running? I wasn't too sure. Instinct told me that she had to come with me. I doubled back and burst into the room. Kelly, we've got to go. Come on, get up. She'd been drifting off to sleep. There was a look of horror on her face because of my change of tone. We've got to go! Grabbing her coat, I picked her up in my arms and started towards the door. I snatched up her shoes and stuffed them into my pockets. She made a sound, half frightened, half protesting. Just hold on, I said. Her legs were wrapped around my waist. I came out onto the landing. I closed the door behind us and it locked automatically. They'd have to break it down. I had a quick check along the corridor, not bothering to look below to see what was happening. I'd soon know if they were behind us. I turned left and ran to the end of the corridor, turned left again, and there was the fire exit. I pushed the bar and it opened. We were on an open concrete staircase at the rear of the hotel, facing the shopping mall area about a quarter of a mile away. She started to cry. There was no time to be nice. I got hold of her head so that her face came right up to mine. People have come to take you away. Do you understand that? I knew it would frighten her, and that it would probably fuck up her mind even more. But I didn't care about that. I'm trying to save you. Shut up and do what I say. I squeezed her cheek hard and shook her face. Do you understand me, Kelly? Shut up and hold me very tight. I buried her face in my shoulder and lunged down the concrete stairs looking for my escape route. Ahead of us lay about 40 meters of rough grassland and, beyond that, a 6-foot chain-link fence that looked old and rusty. On the other side of that was the rear of the long row of office buildings that faced the main road. Some were brick, some were plaster, all different styles built over the last 30 years. Their rear admin area was strewn with clutter and large cylindrical skips. There was a pathway running across the waste ground, and it went through at a point where a whole section of the chain-link fence had crumpled or been pulled down. Maybe the hotel and office workers used it as a shortcut. Carrying Kelly was like having a Bergen on the wrong way round. That was going to be no good if I had to run fast. So I threw her round onto my back, linking my hands under her arse so I was carrying her piggyback. I got to the bottom of the stairs and stopped and listened. No sound of them shouting or breaking down the door yet. The urge was just to run for it across the waste ground towards the gap in the fence, but it was important to do this correctly. Still with Kelly on my back, not bothering to tell her what was happening, I got onto my hands and knees. I lowered myself to within about a foot of the floor and slowly stuck my head round the corner. There was a chance that, once I'd seen what was happening, I'd choose a different route. The two cars had now been driven to the bottom of the staircase by the Coke machine. The fuckers were obviously upstairs. I didn't know how many of them there were. I realized that they couldn't see most of the waste ground from where they were. I started running. The rain had been light but constant, and the ground was muddy. It was reasonably well looked after, littered only here and there with bits of paper, old soft drink cans and burger boxes. I kept heading for the gap in the chain-link fence. Kelly was weighing me down. I was taking short, quick strides and not bending my knees too much, just enough to take her weight, bending forward from the hips as if I was lugging a Bergen. She made involuntary grunts in time with the running movements as the wind was knocked out of her. We reached the broken section of chain-link, which was buried in the mud. I heard the screech of car tires, then the sound of protesting suspension and bodywork. I didn't bother looking round, just dug deep and lengthened my stride. Once through the gap, we were faced with the rear of the office buildings. I couldn't see the alleyway we'd come through earlier. I turned left, looking for any other route through to the main drag. There must be one somewhere. Now on tarmac, I could make good speed, but Kelly started slipping. I shouted, "Hold on!" and felt her tense up more. "Harder, Kelly, harder!" It wasn't working. With my left hand, I got hold of both her wrists and pulled them down in front of me towards my waist. She was nice and tight on me now, and I could use my right hand to pump myself forward. My priority was to make good speed and distance. They would be out and running soon. I needed that alleyway. It's a strange thing when untrained people are being chased. Subconsciously, they try to get as much distance as they can between themselves and the pursuers, and whether it's in an urban environment or a rural one. They think that means going in a straight line. In fact, what you need to do is put in as many angles as possible, especially in a city or a town. If you come to a junction with 4 options, it makes the chaser's job more difficult. They have a larger area to cover and have to split forces. A hare being chased in a field doesn't run in a straight line. It has a big bound, changes direction, and off it goes again. The pursuers are getting momentum in a straight line, and all of a sudden they have to change direction, too, which means slowing down, re-evaluating. I was going to be that hare. As soon as I got to the end of the alleyway, I was going to chuck a left or a right. I didn't even know which yet, and run as fast as I could until I hit other options. I found the alleyway. No time to think if it was the right decision, just make one. I could hear shouting behind me, maybe 100 to 150 meters away, but it wasn't directed at me. They were too professional for that. They knew it wouldn't have any effect. I heard the cars turning round. They'd be trying to cut me off. I ran. By now, I was out of breath with this 7-year-old on my back. My mouth was dry and I was breaking into a sweat. Her head was banging on the back of mine, and I was holding her so tight that her chin was digging into my neck. It was starting to hurt her, and she was crying.
Stop! Stop, Nick!
I wasn't listening. I reached the end of the alleyway and ran into a totally different world. In front of me was a minor road that ran the length of the office buildings and, on the other side of it, a grass bank that went downhill to the main drag. Beyond that lay car parks and the malls. Traffic noise drowned out Kelly's cries. The flow of vehicles was fast in both directions, despite the wet road. Most had their headlights dipped and their wipers on intermittent. I stopped. We must have looked a sight. A man with a shoeless child on his back, puffing and panting down the grass slope, the child moaning as her head banged on the back of his. I climbed the railings at the side of the main drag, and now we were playing chicken with the Washington traffic. Cars sounded their horns or braked sharply to avoid us. It seemed my new name was Fuck, Nut, or Jerk. I didn't acknowledge anybody. Even the ones who saved our lives by braking, I just kept on running. Kelly was screaming. The traffic scared her as much as the running. All her young life she'd probably been warned about playing near the road, and here she was on a grown-up's back, cars and trucks swerving all around her. Crossing the railings at the far side, I, too, was starting to flap. Kelly was slowing me down, without a doubt, and I still had quite a distance to run to get to safety. I ducked and weaved through the car park, using the height of pickups and people carriers to block us from their view. At the far right of the mall was Comp USA, a computer superstore, and that was where I headed. There's always a good chance that a large store on a corner site will have more than one entrance. I'd expect there to be one on the other side, maybe at the rear, so even if they saw me going in, they'd have problems. I knew the store would be hard for them to deal with because I'd had to do this sort of thing myself in Northern Ireland. If a player went into the shopping centre, we would only send one bloke in with him, then rush to seal up all the exits. It was hard enough when we knew a target, let alone having to find and identify him. If he was doing anti-surveillance drills, he could go up in a lift, leave by one exit, go back in through another and up two floors, down in a lift one floor, then wander out into a car park, and he's gone. If these boys were switched on, they'd start sealing the exits as soon as they saw where I'd gone. I had to be quick. We went in through wide automatic doors. It was like a mega DIY store, with aisles and aisles of office equipment, computers and software packages. I went past the checkout counters without taking a trolley, still with Kelly on my back. The place was packed. I was standing there drenched with sweat, chest heaving up and down as I fought for breath, and Kelly was crying. People started looking at us. Kelly moaned.
I want to get down now.
No, let's just get out of here. I took a look behind, and I could see two boys coming across the car park. In their suits, they looked very much like plainclothes police, and they were running purposefully towards the store. They'd be heading to block off the exits. I had to put in some angles, had to get that confusion going. I ran down a couple of aisles crammed with CD-ROM games, turned right, and ran along the exterior wall, looking for an exit. Fuck it. There wasn't one. The warehouse seemed to be one big sealed unit. I couldn't go back out the way I'd come in. But if I didn't find another exit, I was going to spend the rest of the day running around the shop in circles. One of the young assistants looked at me, turned away, and went trotting down the aisle, obviously looking for the manager or security guard. Seconds later, two men in shirt sleeves with name badges started to approach us. Yes, excuse me. Can we help you? All very polite, but in fact meaning, what the fuck are you doing at our store? There was no time to answer. I ran towards the rear, looking for loading bays, emergency doors, open windows, anything. At last, I saw the sign I was hoping to see. Fire exit. I ran at it, pushed it open, and the alarm went off. We were outside. We were on a platform, obviously used for deliveries where trucks could back in and unload. I ran down the 4 or 5 metal stairs and hit the ground. As I started to run to the left, I shouted at Kelly to hold tight. The rear of the shopping mall was deserted, just a long stretch of admin areas with skips, porter cabins, even a container detached from its truck and being used as a static storeroom. There were piles of cardboard boxes and bulging bin liners everywhere, a day's worth of garbage. Beyond the tarmac stretch was a chain-link fence surrounding the whole area, and probably about 15 feet high. Then waste ground with trees and bushes. On the other side of that, I guessed, would be more car parking and stores. I felt like a trapped rat. I only had 2 exits now, the slip roads at either end of the long line of shops. Chapter 9. I couldn't get over the fence with Kelly on my back, and if I'd tried to throw her over, she'd break her legs. I started to run to the left, along the rear of the shops, heading towards the slip road. It was no good. They'd had too much time to react. The road would be sealed. I had to make a decision quickly. I moved towards one of the collection areas of skips, bagged up garbage and cardboard boxes. I lifted her from my back and positioned her in amongst it all, throwing boxes over the top of her and moving others to fill in the gaps each side. She looked at me and started to cry. I said, "Disneyland, Kelly. Disneyland." She stared at me, tears rolling down her cheeks, and I threw a couple of boxes over the top. "I'll be back, I promise." As I ran, I looked at the container that was right up against the fence. It was a huge thing, the height of a truck. Without 50 pounds of young girl on my back, running towards it was like floating on air. At last, I was in control. I felt as if I'd lost a ball and chain. Sprinting like a maniac, using the cover of the bins and skips, I suddenly spotted the boot of a car jutting out from one of the loading bays. It was a mid-1980s model, not one of the cars that had been chasing me. I'd check it for ignition keys and, if I was out of luck, I'd cross the open ground to the container. A truck was parked up near another loading bay. I started to run past it. A guy was running full pelt the other way and we smashed our heads together. We both went down. Shit. I looked at him through blurred eyes. He had a suit on. There was no way I was going to take a chance. I staggered to my feet and charged at him, banging him up against the car. He tried to wrap himself around me. As I was pushing into him, I could feel with the side of my face that his body was solid. This fucker had covert body armor on. I pinned him up against the car, moved back a pace, and pulled my weapon, flicking on the laser sight with my thumb. Then, dazed, I sank back to my knees. I was seeing stars and my head was spinning, and he was probably in exactly the same state. He looked down at me confused, but trying to make a decision, I aimed the sight onto his face. "Don't do it," I said. "Don't waste your life on this. It's not worth it. Get your hands up now." As his hands moved, I could see he was wearing a wedding ring. "Think about your family. It's not worth dying over this. Number one, you're wrong. It wasn't me. Number two, I'll kill you. Put your hands on your head." My brain was clearing. What the fuck was I going to do now? Their cars would be here soon. "Stay on your knees," I said. "Turn right, move to the back of the vehicle." I got up off the ground and stumbled behind him. My eyes were still smarting as if I'd been hit with CS gas. We were between the loading bay and the car. He knew the score, and hopefully was thinking of his wife and kids. I switched my pistol into my left hand, moved into him, and quickly jabbed the pistol muzzle into his armpit, twisting it into the material of his jacket. I felt his body tense and heard a little grunt. "I'll explain the facts of life for you," I said. "This weapon is screwed into your clothes. I've got my finger on the trigger and the safety catches off. If you fuck about, you'll kill yourself, understand?" He didn't react. I said, "Come on. This isn't difficult. Do you understand me?" "Yes." "Place your hands on your head." With my right hand, I took his weapon. Mine had only one magazine. He was carrying a SIG 45 and a pancake holster over his right kidney and three magazines on his belt. The SIG is an approved weapon of the FBI. He was in his mid-30s and straight off the set of Baywatch. Blonde, tanned, fit, good-looking, square jaw. I could smell baby lotion. This boy wanted to keep his skin soft. Or maybe he had a baby. Who cared? If he moved, he'd be dead. There was a white wire behind his ear, linked to an earpiece. "Who are you?" I said. Not that it made any difference whether he was FBI or plainclothes police. No reply. "Listen, whatever you think, I did not kill that family. I did not kill them, do you understand?" "Nothing." I knew I wouldn't get Baywatch Man to talk. In any event, there wasn't any time to waste trying. I took the radio and cash from his wallet. Then, with the pistol still in his armpit, I whispered loudly over my shoulder, "Stay where you are, Kelly. Don't worry, I'm coming." I gripped him harder. "Kelly, I said, we're going to go in a minute." If they thought Kelly was still with me when I legged it, maybe they'd move on and search a fresh area. I turned back to him and said, "I'm going to untwist this now. Don't fuck me about, it's not worth it." I gradually released my pistol, making sure I could fire at any stage. I was behind him, with the weapon now pointing at his head. He knew that. I said, "You know what I've got to do next, don't you?" There was a slight nod of acceptance. I picked up a lump of angle iron from a pile of discarded shelving and gave him the good news where his neck met his shoulder. That took him down good style. For good measure, I gave him a few kicks to the head and bollocks. At the end of the day, he wasn't going to be more pissed off with me because of this kicking. He probably already wanted to kill me. But I had to stop him raising the alarm. A professional like this boy would be expecting it anyway. If the roles were reversed, it would be him doing the honors. It would certainly fuck him up for about 10 minutes, and that was all I needed. I came out from behind the car and had a quick look around. Nobody in sight. I ran towards the container. There was a large bin beside it that I could use as a springboard. I jumped, threw myself upwards and got my arms onto the roof. I scrambled up. From there, it was just a 15-foot drop to freedom. A sign pointed the way to Maylord's Boardwalk. I turned left and ran along the grass bank, past the bins and into another car parking area. I went straight towards the boardwalk because it promised cover. I was looking for a toilet and, with luck, there would also be an exit to the other side of the mall. The boardwalk seemed to be a mini-mall with mainly shoe and greeting card shops. I found the block of conveniences by the coffee shop about a third of the way down the arcade. Looking further down, I could see there was another exit to the boardwalk. I went into the toilets. Two guys had had a piss and were now washing their hands. I went straight into one of the cubicles and sat there while I waited to calm down. I put the earpiece in my ear and switched on the radio. I didn't get much at all. The sound was all broken up, but that meant nothing. I was probably in a dead spot. I used toilet paper to wipe the blood and mud off my shoes and trousers, and clean myself up as much as possible. When I was sure the other two had gone, I went out to the basins and washed my hands and face. I still wasn't getting anything but mush on the earpiece. I headed for the coffee shop, bought a cappuccino, and sat down about three tables back. From there, I could watch both exits to the boardwalk. I didn't look out of place with the wire in my ear because so many store detectives and security guards wore them. They sparked up on the net. They were talking freely as if the radio was secure, not using codes. I checked, and there was a jack on the radio for the key gun. The device that sends the chosen encryption codes to the radio. Once this has been done to two or more sets, they can talk together securely. Everybody else would just hear mush. I listened to some of them checking round the back, where the boy had been dropped, and others in places that I couldn't identify. What I couldn't hear was a base station, a central control. I started to wonder about that. Then I thought, why was it that these guys and not uniformed police had turned up at the hotel? I was supposed to be a kidnapping murderer. In situations like these, I'd expect to see heavily armed SWAT teams leaping from Chevrolet vans. I realized it was this that had made me run back for Kelly, without even knowing it. I should have checked the boy I'd dropped for any ID. Never mind, it was too late now. How did they find me so quickly at the Best Western? Had my call to London been traced to our room? Impossible. Too quick. Was it my credit card when I checked in? Unlikelier still. Only the firm would have known the details of my cover documents, and they wouldn't have turned me in because they'd be too worried about the Americans finding out about their deniable ops. So it must have been the receptionist. She must have watched the news and recognized Kelly's photograph. But even then, it didn't add up somehow. I started to feel very uneasy. These boys weren't a Mickey Mouse group. When I bumped into Baywatch Man, he'd been wearing a double-breasted jacket and it was open. But it was only now, thinking about it, that I realized that, in fact, it hadn't been open at first. There had been a Velcro fastening. I heard more radio traffic. They'd found him. Baywatch Man's name was Luther, but whoever the boss was on the ground, he didn't really care too much about Luther's condition. He just wanted to know if he was able to talk. Yeah, he's okay. Is he alone? Yeah, he's alone. Did he see the target? No, he says he didn't see the target, but they're still together. Does he know what direction they went? There was a pause. No! I imagined Luther sitting on the ground with his head against the car, getting patched up and feeling pretty pissed off with me. In the background, I could hear him mumbling information. He sounded almost drunk. The sender said, No idea of the direction. And one more thing, he's armed. He had a side arm with him, and he's also taken Luther's... Wait! I heard a click. Then whoever was with Luther came back on the net, and his voice was very agitated. We've got a problem. He's got the radio. He's got the radio. The boss came back on. Fuck! Everybody, off stations, cut comms. Close down now. Out! The earpiece went dead. They were going to turn off the radios and refill with a new code. Luther's radio was obsolete. What I wouldn't have given now for a key gun. Chapter 10. Luther said he hadn't seen the target, so it was Kelly they were after, not me. My face burned with anger. These were the people who'd killed Kev. They must be. This chase was nothing to do with law enforcement. This was about people who wanted to finish the job. Maybe they thought Kelly had seen them. By now I had finished my coffee and the waitress had whisked the cup away. I was starting to be a pain in the arse here. Other people were waiting for my table. I went back into the toilet. The TV remote control was still in my pocket. That went into the waste bin, along with the useless radio. What about Kelly? What did I have to gain by going back? What if they'd found her, disposed of her, and were waiting for me to pick her up? That was what I would have done. I could think of lots of reasons why I shouldn't go back. Bollocks. I walked back towards the mall exit. Looking half left into the dead ground, I could just about see the roof of Comp USA. The car park was still full, and it was raining harder now. I turned up the collar of Kev's jacket and looked towards the main drag. I could see a Wendy's like a desert island in the middle of the car park. It was coffee time again. I checked the route ahead for any sign of my new friends and again used Tall Pickles as cover. I took my burger and coffee over to a window seat. I couldn't see the rear of the buildings, but I could see the nearer of the two slip roads. The one I'd been running towards when I met Luther. Better than nothing. The Wendy's had a PlayStation, which was great cover. Kids screamed around on a tub of multicoloured tennis balls while their parents sat it out, just like me. I sat and stared out of the window at the rain. I remember the times I'd been bad as a child and got a slapping from my stepfather and been put in the shed for the night. I'd been terrified of the rain beating down on the clear, plastic, wriggly roof. I'd sat there curled up, thinking that if the rain could get me, then so could the bogeyman. As a soldier and a K, I'd been shot at, beaten up, imprisoned. I'd always been scared, but nothing like those times as a child. I thought of Kelly, abandoned in her makeshift hidey hole. Rain beating down on the cardboard. Then I cut it from my mind. She'd get over it. I shouldn't let it concern me. I'd done worse things. Still looking out of the window, I saw the white tourist come out from behind the mall onto the slip road, stop at the junction, and turn with the flow of traffic. It was four up by the looks of things, all suits, though in the rain it was hard to be certain. Four up was a good indication that they were lifting off. If they were taking Luther to hospital, there'd be three at most inside. One driving, one looking after the casualty. The others would have stayed behind. I was beginning to feel a decision coming on. I'd have to change my appearance, and I'd have to do it on the cheap. I had about $500 in total and would be needing every cent. I finished my coffee and went back into the boardwalk. I found a clothes shop and bought a thin cotton raincoat that folded up to about the size of a handkerchief. I also bought a Kangol cap. The sort it was fashionable to wear the wrong way round, so the peak was hanging down the back of your neck and the logo was in front. Then I went to an Our Eyes and bought a pair of display glasses with thick rims. Glasses really change the shape of your face. Whenever I'd needed an appearance change on a job, a haircut and glasses had always done the trick. Wearing a different colour and giving yourself a different shape was the minimum required. I went back to the toilet to sort myself out. I ripped out the inside of the raincoat pocket with my teeth. My newly acquired Sig 45 was down the front of my jeans, with the mags in my pockets. If the shit hit the fan, I could draw the weapon and fire through the coat. I wanted to use the last three quarters of an hour of daylight doing a recce of the bin area. The liftoff might have been a ploy, and I wanted to reassure myself that nobody was lying in wait. The idea would be to do a complete 360 degrees around the target area, but before that, I wanted to go back and give the hotel a walk past. I wanted to see if there were any police cars outside, to confirm whether or not it had been an official lift. If Luther and his friends were after a murder suspect, the police should be up there by now, dusting for prints and taking statements. I put on my disguise and looked in the mirror at Washington's hippest dude. Well, nearly. If people looked closely, they would think I was the oldest swinger in town. I turned the cap round with the peak forward and off I went. I walked straight across the car park, crossed the main drag at the junction, and worked my way back up to the Best Western, along the roads. I saw nothing. Everything looked perfectly normal. Not a police car in sight. As I walked back, I thought about the states that Kev, Marsha, and Aida had been left in. Why hack them to bits? Luther and his friends weren't dopeheads. They were pros. They'd do nothing without a reason. They must have wanted it to appear drug-related to cover their asses. Given the number of attempts on Kev's life in the past, it would have been perfectly reasonable for the police to assume that one of them had finally succeeded, and that the perpetrators had then gone overboard and slain the whole family as a warning to others. But I knew that wasn't the reason. They had killed Marsha because they'd have had to assume that Kev had passed on whatever he knew, and then they'd had to kill Aida, simply because they didn't want witnesses. Kelly owed her life to the fact that they hadn't seen her. It was probably only after the news reports that they realized they hadn't finished the job, and that there might be a witness after all. The way they butchered Aida brought back to me a story about the American Hearts and Minds program in Vietnam. In one region, they injected the children of a village against smallpox. The Viet Cong came along a week later and cut off each child's arm. It worked. No more Hearts and Minds program for them. Sometimes the end justifies the means. I had a sort of respect for Luther and Co., but I knew I mustn't fuck about with these people. They were too much like me. Rush hour was now in full swing, and it would soon be dark. The shops were still open, and the area was packed with people. It was great for me. It made me just another punter. As I walked, I had my head down against the rain. I reached the Wendy's car park. This time, I was nearer the fence, wiping my glasses. I looked across the low ground as the rear of the mall came into view. There was a loud hiss of air brakes as a truck backed up to a loading bay. Three other trucks were already parked up alongside the car where I'd met Luther. But again, just as at the hotel, there were no police investigating the crime scene. Maybe they didn't like the weather. Only the bays that were in use were lit. The huddle of skips where I'd hidden Kelly was pretty much in shadow. One was being filled up with the old metal shelving I'd used on Luther. Even from where I was, I could hear the loud crash and clatter. Kelly must be petrified down there. No need for a 360. I'd seen enough. As I looked forward, deciding where to go now, I watched a bus pull up by a shelter, take on passengers, and drive off again. Maybe that was our way out of here. But if they'd found Kelly and set an ambush, where was I going to run? I had to work out an escape route. Hijacking cars doesn't work so well in a built-up area. It attracts too much attention. Better to use the crowds and confusion. I picked three possible routes. Hanging around increased the chance of getting pinged, so I decided to lift off from the area for a while. I carried on to the shops. I thought I'd get some stuff for Kelly because she'd be needing an appearance change too. She'd been on the news. She was famous now. I bought her a nice big floppy hat. I wanted to tuck her hair up out of the way and hide her face as best I could. I also bought her a thinly padded pink three-quarter-length coat to cover those skinny legs, and a completely new set of clothes to fit a 9-year-old. She was tall for her age, so I thought I'd better get the larger size. Almost as an afterthought, I bought myself some new jeans and a t-shirt. With a handful of carrier bags, I retraced the route along the fence. As I walked away from the shops, their lights reflected on the wet tarmac of the car park. The traffic was slow on the main drag. windscreen wipers on full speed. As I got to the fence, I looked left. There was no change. I carried on walking. As I got level with the shops, the slip road started to rise up to meet me. The fence stopped. I turned left down a slippery grass bank and onto the slip road that led to the back of the shops. I followed the fence again as I dropped down into the dead ground. The rain had turned the dust into mush. I now had the fence to my left and the loading bays to my right. I kept on walking, fighting the temptation just to run to Kelly, grab her, and fuck off out of it. That's what gets people caught or killed. My eyes must have looked as if I was plucked into the mains. They were darting everywhere, getting as much information into my head as possible. I wanted to see this ambush before it was sprung. I was committed now. If push came to shove, I'd fucking shove. What if Kelly wasn't there? I'd call 911 and say I'd seen that girl from the news wandering around the area. If she hadn't already been lifted, hopefully the police would get her before Luther's pals did. That was if they hadn't already. I'd then have to take my chances when the Nick Stone manhunt began. Whoever had her would also have my name. I got to within about 20 meters of the bins, still walking at the same steady pace. I didn't even look around now because that took time and effort. I came up to the bins and started to lift away the boxes. Kelly, it's me. Kelly. See? I told you I'd come back. The cardboard was soaking and came apart in my hands. As I pulled the last of it away, I could see she was more or less exactly in the position I'd left her, curled up, sitting on some dry board. My mind flashed back to how she'd looked when I'd found her in the garage. At least she wasn't rocking, with her hands clamped over her ears. She was dry. Maybe the bogeyman had got in, but at least the rain hadn't. I stood her up and put her new coat around her shoulders. "I hope you like pink," I said. "I got this for you too." I put the hat on her head to preserve whatever was left of her body heat. She put her arms around me. I hadn't been expecting it, and I didn't know how to react. I just kept talking to her. She cuddled me harder. I readjusted the hat. "There. That'll keep you nice and dry. Now let's go and get you a bath and something to eat, shall we?" I had the bags in my left arm, and she gripped my left sleeve as we walked. It was awkward, but I needed to keep my right hand free to draw my pistol. Chapter 11. The bus was about half full with shoppers and bulging carrier bags. Kelly was cuddled up beside me in the window seat. Her hat was doing its job. Her hair was tucked up, and the dropped brim covered her face. I was feeling good. I'd saved her from Luther and his mates. I'd done the right thing. We were on our way to Alexandria, an area I knew to be south of central DC, but within the Beltway. And we were going there because that was what had been on the destination board of the first bus to arrive. Everyone was fed up and wet, and the bus was well fucked up. I leaned across and used my sleeve to wipe the condensation from the window, but it didn't help much. I looked towards the front, where the windscreen wipers were working overtime. The priority was a hotel, and we'd have to check into one within the next hour or so because the later in the day I left it, the more unusual it would look. "Nick?" I didn't want to look at her because I could guess what she was going to ask. "Yes?"
"Why were those men chasing you? Have you done something wrong?"
I could feel her looking at me under her hat. "I don't know who they are, Kelly. I just don't know." Eyes still fixed on the clear patch of windscreen, I said, "You hungry?" I could see her hat moving up and down in the corner of my eye. "Not long now. What do you want? McDonald's? Wendy's?" She nodded for both, then mumbled something, I was still looking out of the window. What's that?
Mickey D's.
Mickey D's?
McDonald's. Get with the program.
Oh, okay. That's what we'll get. I went back to my thoughts. I would only use cash from now on. I had to assume the worst, which was that we'd been traced through my credit card. Despite that, I'd still call London again. Deep down, I guessed that they'd probably already consigned my records to the shredder, but what did I have to lose? We drove past a place called the Roadies Inn. It fitted the bill. I didn't have a clue where we were, but that didn't matter. I'd sort that out later. I signalled the driver that we wanted the next stop. When the Roadies Inn had been built in the 1960s, it had probably looked $1 million. Now even the grass outside looked faded, and on the red neon vacancy sign the V and the N were flickering. Perfect. I peered through the fly screen of the door to reception. A woman in her 20s was behind the desk, smoking and watching a TV on the far wall. I only hoped we hadn't had star billing on the news. Looking past her into the back office, I saw a bald, overweight man, probably late 50s, working at a desk. I want you to wait just here, Kelly. I pointed to the wall of the hotel under the upstairs landing that acted as a veranda. She didn't like it. I won't be long, I said, starting to walk backwards towards the doors. Just wait there, I'll be right back. By now, I was at the door. I pointed at her as if I was training a puppy. Stay, okay? The receptionist was wearing jeans and a t-shirt. Her hair was the blondest I'd ever seen, apart from the roots. She glanced away from the TV and said on autopilot, Hello, can I help you? I'm looking for a room for maybe 3 or 4 nights.
Sure, for how many?
2 adults and a child.
Sure, one moment.
And she ran her finger down the booking register. The news was on. I turned and watched, but there was nothing about the murders. Maybe we were already old news. I hoped so.
Can I take an imprint of your card?
I pulled a face. Ah, that's where we have a problem. We're on a fly drive holiday and we've had our bag stolen. We've been to see the police and I'm waiting for the replacement cards, but I'm just running on cash at the moment. I understand you have to take imprints, but maybe if I pay in advance and you disconnect the phone in the room? She was starting to nod her head, but her expression was still the wrong side of sympathetic. We're really stuck. I played the wet and sorrowful Brit abroad. We've got to go to the British consulate tomorrow and sort out our passports. I brought out some dollar bills. It seemed to take a while for it all to sink in.
I'm so sorry to hear about that.
She paused, waiting for more chemicals to interact in her brain.
I'll get the manager.
She went into the office, and I watched her talking to the bald guy at his desk. From their body language, I got the impression he was her father. I felt a drop of sweat roll down my spine. If they refused us a room, we were stranded maybe miles from the next motel, and we'd need to start ordering taxis and raising our profile. Hurry up! I turned and looked outside, but couldn't see Kelly. Fuck. I hoped Mr. Honest Citizen wasn't about to storm in demanding to know who'd left a little girl all alone in the rain. I quickly walked to the door and stuck my head outside. She was still there, standing where I'd asked her to. I came back to the reception desk just as Dad appeared from the back office. The girl was on the telephone taking a booking. Just making sure our car isn't blocking the way, I grinned.
I hear you have a problem.
Dad had a vacant smile on his face. I knew we were okay.
Yes, I sighed. We've been to the police and contacted the card companies. We're just waiting for it to get sorted. Until then, all I've got is cash. I'll pay for the next 3 days in advance.
That's no problem. I was sure it wasn't.
There was no way our little cash transaction would be finding its way under the books. What some people call white trash, Kev used to call children of the corn. They might take a while to understand things, but an earner's an earner in any language. He smiled. We'll keep the telephone on for you. I played the Grateful Brit and booked in. Then Kelly and I traipsed up two flights of concrete and breeze block stairs. Kelly hesitated outside the room, then looked at me and said,
Nick, I want to see Mommy. When can I go home?
Shit, not that again. I wished more than anything that she could go and see Mummy. It would be one less problem. Not long now, Kelly, I said. I'll get some food in a minute, okay?
Okay.
I lay down on the bed and thought out the priorities.
Nick?
Yes? I was looking at the ceiling.
Can I watch TV?
Thank God for that. I reached over to the remote and quickly flicked the channels, checking I wasn't going to catch us both on the news. I found Nickelodeon and stuck with it. I'd made a decision. I'm going out now to buy something to eat, I said, my mind on the one option that hadn't yet been closed. You stay here the same as before. I'll put the Do Not Disturb sign on the door, and you make sure that you don't open it for anybody, do you understand? She nodded. The call box was next to a Korean food store. It was still drizzling. I could hear the noise of car tires on wet tarmac as I crossed the road. I pushed in a couple of quarters and dialed. I got, Good evening, British Embassy, how may I help you? I'd like to speak to the defense attaché, please. May I say who's calling? My name is Stamford. Fuck it. I had nothing to lose. Thank you. One moment, please. Almost immediately a no-nonsense voice came on the line. Stamford? Yes. Wait. There was a long, continuous tone, and I was starting to think I'd been cut off again. Then 30 seconds later I heard Simmons. My call must have been patched through to London. Unflappable as ever, he said. It seems you're in a spot of trouble. Trouble's not the word. In veiled speech I told him everything that had happened since my last call. Simmons listened without interruption, then said, There's not really a lot I can do. Obviously you understand the situation I'm in. I could tell he was pissed off with me big style. You were told to return immediately. You disobeyed an order. You should not have gone to see him, you know that. He was still cool about it all, but under the veneer I knew he was boiling. I could just picture him behind his desk in his crumpled shirt and baggy cords, with the family photo and maybe Easter eggs for his family on his desk, next to a pile of red-hot faxes from Washington that had to be attended to. It's got nothing on the situation I can put you in, I said. I got stuff that will make your lot look not very British at all. I'll blow it to whoever wants to listen. It's not a bluff. I need help to get out of this shit, and I want it now. There was a pause. The patient parent waiting for a child to stop its tantrum. He said, Your position is pretty delicate, I'm afraid. There's nothing I can do unless you have some form of proof that you're not implicated. I suggest you make every effort to discover what has happened and why. Then we can talk, and I might be able to help. How does that sound to you? You can carry out your threat, but I wouldn't recommend it. I could feel his hand tighten around my balls. Whether they complied or called my bluff, I'd be spending the rest of my life on the run. The firm does not like being strong-armed. I've got no choice, really, have I? I'm glad you see it like that. Bring what you find. The phone went dead. My mind racing, I wandered into the shop. I bought a bottle of hair tint, 1 wash in, 12 washes out, and a hair trimmer gadget.
I also bought a full washing and shaving kit because we couldn't look like a couple of scruffies at large in Washington. Then I filled a basket with bottles of Coca-Cola from the chiller and some apples and candy. I couldn't find a Mickey D's and ended up in a Burger King. I bought 2 mega deals, then went back to the hotel. I knocked on the door as I opened it. Guess what I've got? Burgers, fries, apple pies, hot chocolate. By the wall, next to the window, was a little circular table. The carrier bags went on the bed, and I dumped the burgers on the table with a flourish, like a returning hunter. Ripping the bags open to make a tablecloth, I tipped the chips out, opened the sauce, and we both dived in. She must have been starving. I waited until she had a mouthful of burger. Listen, Kelly, you know how grown-up girls are always dyeing their hair and cutting it and all sorts of stuff? I thought you might like to try. She didn't look fussed. What do you fancy? A really dark brown? She shrugged. I wanted to get it done before she understood too much of what was happening. The moment she'd finished her hot apple pie, I led her to the bathroom and got her to take off her shirt and vest. I tested the shower temperature and leaned her over the bath, quickly wet her hair, then toweled and brushed it. I got the trimmer going, but I wasn't entirely sure what I was doing. I realized it was for beards, really, and by the time I'd got the hang of it, her hair looked shit. The more I tried to sort it, the shorter it was getting. Soon, it was up around her collar. As I studied the bottle of dye, trying to read the instructions, she said, "Nick?" I was still reading the bottle and hoping I wasn't about to turn her hair into a ginger fuzzball. What?
Do you know the men who were chasing you?
I was the one who should have been asking questions. No, I don't, Kelly. But I will find out. I thought about it and put down the hair dye. I was standing behind her and both of us were looking at each other in the mirror. Her eyes were now not so red around the edges. That only made mine even more dark and tired-looking. I looked at her a while longer. Finally, I said, "Kelly, why did you go to the hidey hole?" She said nothing. I could see that her eyes were starting to question my hairdressing skills. "Did Daddy shout Disneyland?"
"No."
"Then why did you go?" Already this was getting too intense for me. I needed to do something. I picked up the dye.
"Because of the noise?"
I started to comb the dye in. "Oh? What noise was that?" She looked at me in the mirror.
"I was in the kitchen, but I heard a bad noise in the living room, and I went and looked."
"What did you see?"
"Daddy was shouting at the men, and they were hitting him."
"Did they see you?"
"I don't know. I didn't go into the room. I just wanted to shout to Mommy to come and help Daddy."
"And what did you do?" Her eyes went down.
"I couldn't help him. I'm too little."
When she looked up again, I saw her face was burning with shame. Her bottom lip started to quiver.
"I ran to the hidey hole. I wanted to go to Mommy, but she was upstairs with Aida, and Daddy was shouting at the men."
"You ran to the hidey hole?"
"Yes."
"Did you stay there?"
"Yes."
"Did Mommy come and call for you?"
"No. You did."
"So you didn't see Mommy and Aida?"
"No."
The picture of the two of them dead flashed into my mind. I put my arms around her as she sobbed. "Kelly, you couldn't have helped Daddy. Those men were too big and strong. Probably I couldn't have helped him, and I'm a grown-up. It's not your fault Daddy got hurt, but he is okay and wants me to look after you until he is better. Mummy and Aida had to go with Daddy.
There just wasn't the time to collect you. I let her cry a bit, then said, Did you see any of the men who were chasing us today? She shook her head. Did the men who were with Daddy have suits on?
I suppose so, but they had, like, painting things on top.
I guessed what she meant. The sort Daddy would wear to paint the house. I did the actions of putting on a pair of DIY coveralls. She nodded. So, do you mean they had suits on, but had the painting things over the top? She nodded again. I knew it. These boys were good. They were players. They hadn't wanted to get nasty red stuff all over their nice suits. I asked her how many men there were and what they looked like. She was confused and scared. Her lip started to quiver again.
Can I go home soon?
She was fighting back the tears. Yes, very soon. Very soon. When Daddy is better. Until then, I'm looking after you. Come on, Kelly. Let's make you look like a big girl. After a rinse, I combed her wet hair and got her dressed straight away in her new clothes. If we had to move, I needed her dressed, so I told her that the only things she could keep off were her hat, coat, and shoes. She inspected herself in the mirror. The new clothes were much too big and her hair was, well, she didn't seem too sure. We watched Nickelodeon and eventually she fell asleep. I lay staring at the ceiling, going through the options, or rather trying to kid myself that I had some. What about Slack Pat? He would certainly help if he could, as long as he hadn't turned into some drugged-up new-age hippie. But the only way I could think of contacting him was through the restaurant he used to rave about. The way he described it, he practically lived there. The problem was I couldn't remember the name of it, just that it was on a hill on the edge of Georgetown. What about Ewan? He was no good yet, because he'd still be operating in Ulster, and there was no way I could make contact with him until he was back on the mainland. I looked over at Kelly. That was how she would have to live for the next little while, always dressed, ready to run at a moment's notice. I put the eiderdown over her. I piled all the rubbish together and put it in the bin, then checked the sign was still on the door and her shoes were in her pockets. I checked chamber in both weapons. The 9mm in Kev's jacket and the SIG in my waistband. No doubt Kelly was going to be in all of tomorrow's papers, but at least, if the shit hit the fan, we were ready to go. I knew my escape route and would not hesitate to shoot my way out. I got my new clothes out of the bag and took them into the bathroom. I had a shave, then undressed. I stank. Kev's things were stained on the inside with blood. The sweat had thinned it, spreading it right up the back and the shoulders of his shirt and the legs of his jeans. Everything went into a plastic laundry bag, which I'd throw away in the morning. I had a long hot shower and washed my hair. Then I got dressed, checked the door lock, and lay on the bed. I woke up at about 5:30 in the morning after a terrible night's sleep. I wasn't sure if all the bad stuff was a dream. I thought again about money. I definitely couldn't use credit cards because I had to assume they'd either been frozen or would be used as a trace. It was cash or nothing. Not easy in the West nowadays. Pat's, if I got to him, would fund me, but I knew I'd have to take advantage of any spare time to get hold of more. Kelly was snoring big time. I picked up the key card, gently closed the door behind me, checked the sign was up, and went looking for a fire extinguisher. Chapter 12. As I passed the open door to the cleaner's storeroom, I spotted half a dozen wedge-shaped doorstops on a shelf. I helped myself to a couple. I found the fire extinguisher on the wall by the elevators. I quickly unscrewed the top of it and removed the carbon dioxide cylinder, a 9-inch black steel tube.
I put it in my jacket and walked back to the room. I put the 3 spare magazines for the SIG-45 in the left-hand pocket of Kev's jacket and decided I was going to keep the USP in the room. I hid it in the cistern. A weapon can stand getting wet in the short term. I just didn't want Kelly to find it and start putting holes in herself. I dozed some more, woke up and dozed again. By 7 a.m. I was bored and hungry. Breakfast was included in the room price, but to get it, I'd have to go downstairs to reception. Kelly started to stir. I said, "Good morning. Do you fancy something to eat?" She was all yawny, sitting up and looking like a scarecrow because she'd gone to sleep with wet hair. Straight away I put on the TV for her because I didn't really know what to say. She looked down at her clothes, trying to work it out. "You fell asleep," I laughed. "I couldn't even undress you last night." "Hey, it's like camping, isn't it?" She liked that.
"Yeah."
She smiled, still sleepy. "Shall I go and get you some breakfast?" She didn't look up, just nodded at the television. "Remember, you must do this every time. You never, ever open the door. I'll come back using the key. Don't even open the curtains because the cleaning ladies will think it's okay to come in. And we don't want to talk to anyone, do we? I'll leave the do not disturb sign, okay?" She nodded. I wasn't sure how much of it had gone in. I picked up the tray the ice bucket was on, put on my glasses and went down to reception. It was already fairly packed, people with camper vans who couldn't be asked to sleep in them, and salesmen looking clean, fresh, and straight out of the appearance counts section of the manual. The breakfast area was made up of 2 or 3 tables by the coffee flasks under the TV. I took 3 packets of cereal, bagels, and muffins, some apples, then 2 cups of coffee and an orange juice. The corn child had just finished her shift and came over. "I hope everything goes well with your passports and all." She smiled, helping herself to a bagel. "I'm sure it'll be fine. We're just going to concentrate on having a good holiday."
"If you need any help, you just come and ask."
"Thanks." I walked over to the desk and picked up a complimentary USA Today. I also helped myself to a Roadies Inn book of matches from a whole bowl of them and a paperclip that was in an ashtray full of elastic bands and office bits, and went back to the room. 10 minutes later, Kelly was munching on her cereal and glued to Nickelodeon. I said, "I'm going out for about an hour. I've got stuff to do. While I'm away, I want you to have a wash and be all nice and clean for when I get back, and have your hair brushed. Are you going to be all right on your own? With your big girl haircut?" She shrugged.
"Whatever."
"What are your favorite colors?"
"My favorite colors are pink and blue."
"Well, we've got the pink." I pointed at the coat hanging up with her shoes sticking out of the pockets. That had been a bit of luck. "Now I've got to get you something blue." I gave my glasses a quick clean with toilet paper, put them back in their case and into Kev's jacket, then put my long black raincoat over the top, checking the pocket for the cylinder. I emptied my pockets of loose change. I wanted to cut down on noise and always felt better anyway with as little as possible dragging around my clothes. I had my Kangol hat in my hand and was all ready to go. "I won't be long. Remember, let no one in. I'll be back before you know it." It had stopped raining, but the sky was still grey and the ground wet. The road was choked with cars heading into downtown DC. It's a people town, and the sidewalks were busy too. I walked briskly to keep pace with the office workers, all with their "got to get up, got to get on" expressions, all the time looking for the ideal place to make some money quickly and get back to the hotel before Kelly started panicking. It was too early for a shopping mall, since they didn't open till 10-ish.